Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee for Wednesday, May 22nd. So I'm going to briefly go over the agenda, and then we'll get started. First, we have up a work session left over from last meeting. So we're going to open up the work session, and then we will go into our public hearing, and I will read sort of a statement about how the public hearing will be run. So we were, we're going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2801 that was carried over from the 5-20-2013 agenda. And Beth, can you provide us with an overview? And we do have the amendment, correct?
Correct, Madam Chair. So you have the -A13 amendment in front of you that we discussed at the last moment or at the last meeting. The fiscal statement was issued as in your packets and on OLIS, and there's a no revenue impact both on the -A13 amendment. The amendment requires rules adopted on certification of home assessors may not allow for reporting of individual addresses of residential structures or names of homeowners, but may allow for reporting of information that allows ODOE to make aggregated evaluations. It requires the appraisal board to report initial findings to the Legislative Assembly no later than February 1, 2014.
Okay, thank you. And we are in a work session. Senator, I will take a motion.
Chair Dinkfelder, I move to adopt the -A13 amendments dated 5-17-2013.
Okay, Senator also moves to adopt the -A13 amendments dated 5-17-2013. Is there any discussion? I just want to thank my vice chair who worked very closely with the committee staff and the representative from the other side, Representative Bailey, making this a better bill. So thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
Okay, any objections to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Take a motion for the full bill.
Chair Dingfelter, I move House Bill 2801A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves House Bill 2801A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Hansel.
Excused.
Senator Hatch.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Dingfelter.
Aye. With that, the motion carries. And Senator Olson, since you worked very hard on this amendment, would you like to carry the bill?
I would be honored to carry it. Thank you.
Oh, and before I drop the gavel, Senator Hansel, would you like to vote on House Bill 2801A as amended with the -13s?
Sure.
How would you like to vote?
Sure.
Okay. And Senator Olson is carrying it. So please note for the record that we now have, instead of excused, we have an aye vote. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2801A. And before we open up the public hearing on the next bill, which is House Bill 2624A. I'm just going to read a few instructions for folks, and then we will get started. Today, we are hearing House Bill 2624A, which allows the use of dogs to hunt cougars in a county of voters that a county approves a local ballot measure, exempting the county from the ban. This is scheduled for a public hearing only, as a work session has not been scheduled. We will start today's meeting with first testimony from we have two legislators who would like to say a few words. Then we have an informational overview of cougar management in Oregon. I have asked the Department of Fish and Wildlife to come and give a brief overview of the status for the cougar management plan. I have two panels that are scheduled, a panel of proponents and a panel of opponents, and they will have 15 minutes each, and then once the panels are finished, we will start taking public testimony, 2 minutes each. You notice there is a clock up here, and the time, except for the legislators, although I know that they will be brief because we have a lot of people in the room, you will see a time limit up here, and this clock works just like a traffic signal, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. There'll be a red, a yellow, a green, a yellow, and a red. When the red comes up, that means your time is up. And if you don't stop, that's why we have a gavel, and we will ask you to stop to be fair to other people who'd like to testify. If you have written testimony, please make sure and hand it to the committee assistant. I'm going to ask you not to read your testimony, if you can summarize it, because as you probably will know, 2 minutes goes pretty quickly. The committee will hear testimony today until 5 p.m., and due to the number of individuals who are expected to give testimony, it will be necessary, as I mentioned, to limit your oral testimony to 2 minutes. We will alternate between, we will call up 4 people at a time, so I'll ask you to come up, and we will alternate. We have a list of people who signed up for the bill and a list against, and we will try to, I will alternate that, so we will hear from both sides. Please do not show support or opposition while the committee is receiving public testimony. We ask that you be respectful. We have people who are passionate on both sides of this issue, and we want to make sure everybody is afforded the proper respect that we all share. And remember that we're all Oregonians, and we do not want to interfere with Oregonians' right to come and testify and to hear their issues and testimony. So with that, we will go ahead and ask our legislators to come up, and then we will have the agency come up, and then we will move into the panels. Yes, and I will go ahead and open up the public hearing on House Bill 2624A. Welcome, representatives.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clemsey, representative from here in Salem, District 21. And I also serve on the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, where this bill came out of from the House side, passed the House, I think, 40 to 19 to 1 absent, and is now here in the Senate. I appreciate the courtesy hearing. I know there's no work session, but I appreciate the opportunity to even chat about this with you. And I just want to talk a little bit about really why I got involved in this issue, because I am a lifelong hunter, but in my family, we just don't happen to hunt things we don't eat, so I've never been interested in hunting predators. And when I had conversations with my family over the years, starting back in the 1990s, we were sort of ambivalent about the ballot measures, you know, around hunting camp, sitting around talking around hunting camp. There wasn't that strong of feelings, to be honest, in my family. It was more like, well, yeah, maybe, I don't know, I've never been into it, maybe we shouldn't do it, I don't know. Well, since then, all that's changed within my own circles of hunting community because of the effect on deer and elk population for those of us who do still like to hunt. So while others will often talk about things like public safety issues with cougars getting into the population centers and causing, you know, being around the school in Lake Oswego and having to lock it down last week, I actually really have been pretty focused on what happens to deer hunting in this state and elk hunting, because that I think is for me the core problem. I think we have addressed through both an allowance in the ballot measure and further efforts the ability to respond to problem situations, cougars that are found in areas they shouldn't be, cougars that have killed a pet. We do have a way to respond to that, and we have even gone so far as to create the agent definition so volunteers could do that so we don't have to pay them. But that doesn't deal with the core issue of game management. And the philosophy behind game management in this country has been pretty consistently, now that humans exist, our wildlife biologists are going to have to manage the fact that we're here too, along with animals, because nature used to take care of this on its own. Now we're here. So if we are going to hunt deer and elk, which I believe most Oregonians, even if they don't do it, believe it is a core part of being an Oregonian, that you have the right to do that if you choose to, there need to be a balance in the populations of cougars and humans and deer and elk. And right now, what's happened is the number of cougars have roughly, according to ODF&W, doubled since we took away one management tool. And it used to be that we would be paid by people to manage populations by surveying the amount of roughly biologically sustainable levels and then allow hunters to harvest up to keep that level about at the right spot, 3,000 cougars. We got there after letting cougars get all the way down to 200 by not managing them and just letting people hunt them. And they got down to a very small, dangerous number in the 50s. We put them in a game management system. They came back up to a healthy level. Then we took away a management tool, and now they've exploded in population because there's not a really effective way to hunt a cougar unless you have dogs. That's why we use them even in the trouble situations. So that's really the only point that I want to make to you. And I know you've got lots of people, but To me, this really is about letting scientists analyze population levels, then using the most effective tactic that we've got, which is having an agency declare an animal as a game mammal and then use the tools available through hunters doing it voluntarily, because that's the cheapest for us here at the legislature to do, and it's the most enjoyable for Oregonians who do want to hunt predators. Having those systems in place is what's worked well for this country for a long, long time. In Oregon, that changed. The Washington legislature, not long after enactment by the voters, all democratically controlled, went back and put cougars back in select places. The way this bill is structured would allow voters to put cougar management by hunting with dogs back in only select places. This is, in 2009 we passed a bill to the Senate, and in 2011 we passed a bill to the Senate that was just a statewide, essentially undo the ban. This is different. This would be counties could petition to ODFW after a vote of their electorate and say, we're interested in getting game management back. ODFW could still say, no, sorry, there's not enough population of cougars in your area, so we're not going to reinstitute the practice there. But if it were petitioned by the people of that county to do it, they could say, yes, we are going to allow dogs to be used in that county again. And that's with that, I will end my testimony and let my colleague and co-sponsor, chief co-sponsor, address you. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sherry Springer, State Representative, House District 17. I represent areas like Mill City, Gates, Lyons, Detroit, Idana, Waterloo, Lebanon, Sweet Home, and Scio. Very rural areas. I often say that Lebanon is my metropolis and my smallest city hall does not have indoor running water, and that is a fact. And we live in an area where we have a lot of cougars, and that's okay. That's okay. We're not, I don't come from a position of eliminating them. I think they're a majestic, wonderful animal. I'm sitting here looking at ODFW's presentation. It's a beautiful, majestic animal. And I'm glad that there is a cougar management plan in this state to manage that population appropriately and not eradicate them. I'm glad we don't have 200 cougar in this state like we did in the 50s. That was a problem. And that was a mistake, and I'm glad it's been rectified. What I'm here to talk about is balance. And as we move through this conversation today, and you're going to hear a lot of testimony, I would just ask that you would put couple things in the back of your mind to be listening for and to be aware of, and I know you've already done that on your, with your own filters and how you process this information, but I'd like to just maybe remind you of a couple, three pieces of information. Number one, we hunt cougars in the state of Oregon presently, and it is completely legal. If you fill a tag, and if you buy a tag and then you fill the tag and you get a cougar, you can go buy another tag. ODFW might correct me, but I think last time I checked, the tags are $12. That's a pretty inexpensive tag. That should tell us something. The fact that you can buy another tag should tell us something. However, occasionally in certain areas, the season is ended prematurely because the numbers have been achieved. The quotas have been achieved because of the Cougar Management Plan. So one thing that is very important to me and I offer up is this bill, House Bill 2624, does nothing to impact the numbers and the science behind the Cougar Management Plan that was established in the state. Does nothing to that. This is just a method of hunting that is used. Years ago, 10, 20 years ago, you did not hear of cougar encounters to the extent that you do today. People had, out where we live out on some property, we have dogs, they bark. We don't have deer, that's probably because the dogs bark. So you have that kind of encounter. Anymore, that's not the case because we have cougars that have no experience with the dogs barking. They have no experience with unwelcome behavior when they come into more populated areas. Very true story, very upsetting story. One of my constituents in Mill City came out of her house with the kids to take them somewhere to get in the minivan, and she went back in the house because there was a cougar laying under her minivan in the driveway. I don't think that is what we're desiring. It's not what I desire. That's not safe. And I've heard many people quickly quip back, well, they can just shoot them. That's legal. Not in the city limits. Not even in the city limits of a small town. That's not legal. Many of the tools to help control the population have been eliminated with the elimination of hunting with hounds. However, we still do it in this state. We pay people to do it. We target certain cougars to do that. So I'm really careful with the fact that we have said it is okay in certain instances to do this already. This, to me, is about a fiscal management piece. I don't want to pay people to do this when they're lined up, literally oftentimes at my front door saying, what are you going to do about this? People willing to pay to help implement the Cougar Management Plan. And again, I'd remind you, the numbers don't change. This is just one tool in the toolbox. Another thing that, and Representative Clem mentioned this, and I found it very interesting, and frankly, it was a bit of a lively conversation in our home a couple weeks ago when 5 o'clock news, 6 o'clock news, 8 o'clock news was about the cougar sighting in Lake Oswego. And the school went into lockdown, and they had robocalls calling families and doing all sorts of stuff. I don't have a clue how many times that's happened in many of my school districts, in many of my schools. I actually have bus drivers. Part of the protocol is you do not let kids off at certain areas unless there's an adult there. This isn't just kindergartners. Unless there's an adult there because of the numerous cougar sightings in that particular area. It's a protocol that's been in place. We don't hit the 5 o'clock news and the 6 o'clock news and the 8 o'clock news. We don't send out robocalls. We pick up our cell phones and we call our neighbors, and we just have ways that we deal with that. I believe the passage of House Bill 2624 would impact that in a very appropriate, manageable, balanced way to allow people a greater sense of safety. Now, I'm sure you'll hear today that there's been nobody killed in Oregon yet. I've heard that statement for 4 years. Nobody's been killed yet. Why do we say yet? And is that what we're waiting for? That's the question I put to people all the time when they say that. Is that what we're waiting for? The proverbial stoplight. And I encourage this committee to seriously consider taking action on this. I certainly appreciate the public hearing today on this. And I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. I know we have a lot of people here to testify, so we'll quickly see if there's any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Clem, you mentioned you're a hunter.
Yeah.
I am a fisherman. I don't hunt much, but I do read the regulations. So I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to ask this to ODFW. You know that the regulations for hunting are extensive. You must be very literate in where you are and what you are doing to make certain that you don't violate the rules. So this question to you, for the record, do you think that ODFW will be competent to be able to enforce the restrictions necessary to maintain that balance that we so desperately need?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I do. I will say, though, that I have found that most hunters, so for this particular thing, the trickiest one to monitor is, are they in the county that they're supposed to be in where dogs are allowed? But as hunters, we all look at those boundaries in the synopsis, and you look, you know, the river, Umpqua River South is this unit, and Beulah unit, or the Melrose is blah, blah, blah. So finding out to know you're within the county lines is really the responsibility of the hunter, and that's the way it is currently for a unit. It's on us. We get the ticket if we don't. So that's the major portion of, I think, enforcement of this particular bill is once it's authorized, voters have authorized it, ODFW has done the count, it's up to the hunter to make sure they're within the county lines. Now, is ODFW capable of managing the count and knowing when to say yes or no to a county? I believe so. And I'll tell you, after working on this now for almost 6 years, I find that if you can't get two people to agree that ODFW knows how to count correctly, we never can get any further. I've had so many discussions. One believes they're corrupt and don't know what they're doing, or corrupt. Another believes they're incompetent. People like me believe in them, trust them. If you think the numbers are still 300, which I've heard some people say, oh, no, we're still only got a few hundred statewide, well, then, of course, you don't think we should be hunting any more cougars. If you think they're still around 2,000 or 3,000, you probably don't think we should be hunting more cougars. If you trust them to be able to count cougars and the people who work there, to be able to count populations, then you think, wow, they doubled, and we probably ought to do something before the cougars spread to a place where they're now inhumanely starving, and then they start eating pets and you know, hopefully never, but at some point, people. I mean, I've got articles of people being attacked in their homes by starving cougars and in the state of Washington.
So we're going to hear from the department, I think, as well on that. And Senator Bates had a question.
Just a quick question. There's been a lot of people who need to speak, and I want a quick answer if you can give it to me. There's a little bit to me of a logic I can't quite follow. On one hand, you're saying we've got a cougar management plan from ODFW that's working. On the other hand, I hear we have people in danger. That sounds like the plan's not working to me. And I want to ask ODFW the same question.
Sure.
And you're saying the number of cougars that are going to be killed if you hunt them with dogs is going to be the same as being done under the management plan. Well, it's another tool in the toolbox for getting cougars, but if you're not going to get more cougars out of an area, I don't understand it. And so I'll ask the same question over the FNW. And on the county line thing, you know, dogs don't know where the county line is either. And sometimes those puppies get rolling and you can't find them till the next day. So, I mean, that's a consideration also in this. Not that someone shoots the cougar and they're all across the county line, but I've had friends and I have good friends that have done this, and we've gone out looking for those dogs sometimes or a couple of days before we found them again.
So I think that's more of a comment than a question, and I am going to ask Representative, the other representative, if she wants to give us a quick answer so we can get the department up and get the panels going.
Yeah. Sure. So very briefly, and thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Bates, to your question, Cougar Management Plan is based on science, and you can find a lot of people to argue both sides of the science, but it's based on some science. And it projects numbers. It has numbers for different areas, different parts of the state. Rarely, and ODFW is going to assuredly give you a completely accurate answer on this, most areas do not fill those tags. That's why you can go back and get another one. So you fill your tag, you can go back and get another one. That's a signal that the cougar number in that particular hunt area, not county, hunt area, that cougar number is not being achieved. Occasionally it does. It's not being achieved because I believe, and many folks will believe, and you'll hear some experts today talk about it, hunting without hounds is a very ineffective method to hunt cougar.
All right, thank you very much, Representative Clemon, Representative
Springer.
The ticket's
still on the person, not the dog.
And I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless the dogs learn to shoot, they probably aren't going to
We're working on that.
Yeah.
Thank you for your testimony today and for coming over to the Senate side. So we have the Department of Fish and Wildlife to come up, provide an overview of the status of the Cougar Management Plan. I think you might have a presentation. And then we'll call up the panels. And I do want to mention that for folks who signed up, I forgot to say that we, for the public testimony, we'll be inviting people who traveled over 100 miles first to make sure that they get heard. We have a lot of people. Like I said, we won't get to everybody, but we want to make sure that folks that drove a long way get to be heard first. Okay, Kurt, thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I do apologize. We've been shuffling the lineup here over the last week in terms of staff presentations. So it is myself and Dr. Dwayne Jackson here today to brief you. We did bring a PowerPoint. I also am handing out copies of the background information that we prepared for the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We delivered this to them on April 2nd, I believe. And so I just wanted to reformat that document so you all had the same basic background information. I'm not going to speak to this today in any detail. Parts of it will be highlighted in our presentation here. And I will try and be brief. We have a number of slides here, and I do want to make sure we save time for Dr. Jackson to talk about some of the research that's currently underway and also have some time for questions. So with that, I'll move forward. Cougar Mansion in Oregon, and I know I've said this before, and truly, I know some folks may take issue with this, but truly is a success story. And there are a number of wildlife management success stories in Oregon. Cougars are clearly one of them. During the period from the 1800s through 1967, they were considered an unprotected predator. There were bounties on cougars as early as 1843 and up through at least the 1950s, no restrictions on any harvest or harvest method, and which included not only hunting, trapping, but also poisoning. The cougar population declined dramatically over that period, as you might expect, and by the mid-1960s, we estimate that there were about 200 cougars statewide. We had essentially no cougar conflict in the state, as you could imagine, with that small number. Livestock depredations and other conflict were almost unheard of. In the mid-1960s, the legislature reclassified cougars as a protected game animal and handed management authority over to the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Now the Fish and Wildlife Commission, implemented essentially total protection in the early years, very limited controlled hunting opportunities through the 1970s and 1980s. Primarily, those controlled hunting opportunities were targeted pursuit in that hunters utilized hounds to target their hunting activity. And then in 1994, of course, Measure 18 passed, which prohibited the use of dogs to hunt cougars and bears. There were exceptions in that ballot measure that allowed the department and our agents to continue to use dogs for management and research purposes. So since 1994, then, we've transitioned our management approach from one of targeted hunting with a very small number of tags and a very high success rate to a general season approach. Hunters without the aid of hounds are generally, and I think you'll probably hear from many of them, generally pretty ineffective at targeting cougars on an individual basis. So we've simplified our approach in that now all cougar seasons are general seasons. The tags are purchased over the counter, and as you heard mentioned, they're fairly reasonably priced at, I believe, $14.50 per tag. We do have zone-based quotas in place since 1995, and those zone-based quotas are rarely reached, so that each individual zones have generally been open throughout the year without full quota achievement. And our modeling, as has been mentioned, projects that the population has doubled since 1994. Did want to also talk to you a little bit about the cougar management plan today and also our use of agents, so I'm going to talk very fast and move on here. The original plan was adopted, I believe, if I go back in, 1987, I believe. The plan was updated in 1993 and then again in 2006. The plan went through an extensive public process with focus group meetings, external peer review, as well as public meetings around the state. There's a number of management objectives in the plan, and I did email a link to you through Beth, I believe, to the plan. So hopefully, I didn't deliver paper copies. It's quite an extensive document, so you can look at it online. The plan describes that the department will manage cougars at or above the 1994 statewide population level of 3,000 cougars. The department will proactively manage cougar-human conflicts as well as cougar and livestock conflicts, and that we would proactively manage cougar populations in a manner that's compatible with management objectives for other game mammals outlined in our ODFW management plans. Mentioned briefly our population abundance estimate. This figure, I believe, is also in the handout that I provided you, shows the trend since 1987 based on a modeled population estimate. So cougars are not an easy animal to census in that their life history and their habits are not such that we can easily go out and just do a simple visual census. So we're currently using a deterministic model that was developed and published in 2002. We have a new model under process that a number of our staff folks are working on that will hopefully be published here in, I believe, in early 2014, which is a contemporary stochastic population model. So it includes model estimates and variable estimates around each model parameter. And lastly, I wanted to mention that our statewide population models for cougars rely heavily on harvest data, as you might imagine. Number of complaints, I think you'll hear about the complaints. We do track the complaints that our district offices receive. You'll see that through the 1990s, we saw basically steady increase in number of complaints from citizens on related to cougar and human interactions. And over the last decade or a little more, we've seen a steady decline in the number of those complaints. I want to talk a little bit about target areas. One of the important components of the 2006 Cougar Management Plan is the Commission adopted a section on target areas, which essentially directed us to go out in areas where we have either livestock conflicts, human safety conflicts, or big game management objective issues to go out and administratively remove cougars, to then evaluate the results of that management action, results being the effect on those conflicts. We have a number of research projects underway, and Dr. Jackson will highlight a number of those for you as well. Both in Northeast Oregon as well as in Southwest Oregon. Our research is, as you might imagine, focused on applied research, so we're looking at factors that we can then utilize as we adopt and or as we adapt and review and modify our management plans. And we continue to do a great deal of outreach, and the outreach is done not only at the local district office level, but also by our staff, and just in terms of helping people understand ways to live with cougars, ways to mitigate and minimize conflicts. And at least to some degree, we believe that that has resulted in the decrease in complaints, as I mentioned earlier. We do have House Bill 2390, which is still in this committee, I believe, scheduled for a work session next week to extend the sunset on our Cougar Agent Bill, which in, I believe it was 2007 or 2005, now I can't remember which, we got authority to use volunteer agents in our Cougar work. These volunteer agents provide a great service to us. They're used to address both cougar and bear damage and human safety, and as well as target area and research purposes. And these agents do use dogs, that is hounds, in the pursuit of cougars. The Commission has adopted extensive administrative rules that guide us in selecting these agents. And we currently have 21 agents that are approved, and at least one agent is basically available for each of the 36 counties. Obviously, with 21 currently approved, some agents are covering more than one county. I did want to share with you a little bit about how we've used agents over the last 5 years. And you'll see from this table, and I won't go through all the details, but 70% of our use of agents has actually been associated with our research activities. So they've been used in non-lethal research activities where we've actually captured cougars for a variety of purposes, including radio collaring. And I would add that, as footnoted there, the Oregon Hunters Association has also contributed during 2011 and 2010 for some of our cougar target area work and helping fund the volunteer agents. At this point, Chair Dingfelder, I want to hand the presentation off to Dr. Jackson to go through some of the research activities that are underway, and then we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yeah. Dr. Jackson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. What I'd like to do today is provide you a quick introduction into the research that provides the science-based data that we've been using for our cougar management.
Can you just repeat your name? I'm sorry, Dr.
Dwayne Jackson. Thank you. That anyway, the research that the department has been doing is providing the science-based data that we currently use for incorporating into our cougar management plan and management of cougars in Oregon. We've actually examined cougar ecology since 1989. On average, we've radio marked and monitored 27 cougars on an annual basis every single year since 1989. We've collected biological information on over 8,000 cougar mortalities since 1987. And currently, we have specific Oregon data on cougar age structure, reproductive and survival rates, habitat use, and prey utilization. Over the course of the years, we've had six major research studies in the state of Oregon that was predominantly funded and coordinated by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Our most recent study was the Mount Emily study, which has 3 years of data, and then it varies from there up to the Jackson Creek study, which was done in southwestern Oregon from 1993 to 2002 and has 10 years of data. We've actually published quite a bit of our information from our cougar research studies, most of those in scientific peer-reviewed journals. We've presented across the United States 7 professional presentations related to our cougar data here in Oregon, and currently we have 8 publications in progress for submission to future scientific journals. We have all kinds of information about cougar biology from these particular research studies. Today, I'd like to talk about very briefly the density estimates, mortality, survival rates, dispersal, prey selection, and the impacts of cougar densities to our ungulate populations. Unfortunately, we won't have time to go into home range reproduction, weights, age, habitat use, a lot of the other biological information that we have, just because of the time constraints. So the very first thing that I'd like to talk about is the density estimates. That one of the first studies that we got involved with was in the Jackson Creek Cougar Study area, south, east and southwest of Roseburg, from 1993 to 2002. And we used mark recapture and radio telemetry monitoring to make annual population estimates and annual density estimates from those populations based on the size of the study area. Those annual estimates range from 2.7 to 4.3 cougars per 100 square kilometers. 9 years later, with a totally different technique, we again surveyed cougar densities in northeast Oregon utilizing wildlife detection dogs to locate cougar scat, which allows us to utilize the DNA off of that scat to individually identify individual cougars and then make our density estimates from that. So a totally different, unrelated technique. Again, the same density estimates, 4.3 to 4.6 cougars per 100 square kilometers. So we're fairly confident, at least in our high-density areas, we have roughly 4 cougars per every 100 square kilometers. As I mentioned, we've been radio marking cougars across the years for a set of numerous years. One example of this particular research was done from January 2002 to June 2008, where the department radio collared 68 individual cougars during 7 winter capture periods. 33 of those individuals died from the causes of mortality that you see in the lower portion of this slide. What's interesting is that hunter mortality is the highest significant factor in this particular study. And in addition to that, the values that you see here are very similar to the statewide mandatory check-in data of nearly 8,000 different mortalities across the state. The radio-marked animals also allow us to develop annual survival rate estimates for our cougar populations here in Oregon. The 4 studies across the bottom of the slide here, the Catherine Creek, Jackson Creek, and the Wenaha Sled Mount Emily studies, we've combined the Wenaha Sled and Mount Emily studies into a single estimate. But what you can see from this particular slide for the adult females, any female greater than one year of age in the black diamonds shows across those studies very disparate areas, very disparate time periods, the average annual survival rate is over 80%, which just indicates that if you start today with 100 adult female cougars, 1 year from now, 80 of them will still be alive. The same type of analysis with our male cougars, which is the open box squares, shows an average survival rate greater than 70%. So again, out of every 100 males, adult males alive today, 1 year from now, over 70% of them will still be alive. We also have information on juvenile cougar dispersal from our Jackson Creek study in southwestern Oregon. The information from this particular study shows you the area of influence that a subpopulation of cougars can impact. We had 10 male juvenile cougars that dispersed from the study area. The average dispersal distance was 51 miles, and 100% of those individuals died prior to reaching 3.5 years of age from 7 different sources of mortality. 19 females from our Jackson Creek Cougar Study area dispersed 22 miles on the average. Many of the females did not disperse at all, and only 22% of those individuals died. So with almost no dispersal and very high survival rates, we had a lot of female juvenile cougars setting up home ranges in the same area, which led to the higher densities that we documented. Additionally, we didn't detect any significant direction of dispersal from our study area. So essentially, that particular subpopulation of cougars provided juveniles that could disperse to any area around the study area. Because of our declining elk populations across the state, we wanted to examine the importance of the nutritional condition of our cow elk versus the predation that might be occurring on those populations to determine which factor was more important in causing a decline in our population. Was it the nutritional condition of the cow, or was it predation rates? And so for that study, we initiated the nutrition predation study in two separate study areas, one in southwest Oregon, one in northeast Oregon, both conducted simultaneously, four years in the southwest study, 6 years in the northeast study. We had simultaneous study areas with concurrent population or major components that we wanted to examine, which was the nutritional and reproductive status of cow elk, the calf elk survival and causes of mortality, and then to substantiate at the same study sites the cougar, bear, deer, and elk populations that were existing at those study sites. From those studies, we captured greater than 600 cow elk and greater than 600 elk calves, radio marked all those individuals, and then documented the cause of mortality of every single elk calf in the study. Over the course of those 6 years, we documented the mortality cause for 232 elk calves. As you can see from this pie chart, cougar mortality or cougar predation accounted for 73% of all elk calf predation. Black bear, unknown, and various sundry other causes added up to 30% of the overall elk calf mortality. From that study, we had several different estimates of annual survival rate for our elk calves that we marked and cougar density estimates for the study areas. As you can see from this particular slide, there is a direct relationship as you increase the cougar density from 1 to 4 cougars per 100 square miles across the bottom of the axis of this slide, the probability of survival for an elk calf decreases dramatically. So as you increase density of cougars, you decrease the probability that the elk calf is going to survive. Obviously, this particular study was concentrated on elk because we were experiencing elk population decline across the state, and it doesn't address some of the other concerns about our deer populations that are also a concern. And because of that, we, as we've indicated in our cougar management plan, we're adaptively trying to step through a lot of our research efforts to answer questions in the plan. Thus, we started the cougar prey selection and population estimation study in the Mount Emily Wildlife Management Unit, and we concentrated on the cougar prey selection and cougar population estimates in an area in which there were good deer populations that provide an alternative prey source for cougars if they chose to prey on those particular species. We've incorporated those particular estimates into our statewide deer and elk population models. Just to give you a feeling for what this particular study indicated, although we did document 51 non-ungulate prey out of a considerable number of prey remains that we found, primarily cougars eat deer and elk, not surprisingly. Male cougars, about 50-50% deer and elk, number-wise. Female cougars concentrate their efforts on deer populations, and almost 75% of the numbers of prey remains that we found were deer that were consumed by female cougars. If you throw everybody together and look at it, it's about a 70-30% split, with deer being a majority of the prey numbers. However, if you want to look at it on a prey biomass, how much food does an individual prey item provide to a cougar, male cougars are almost 3/4 of their percent of their consumption are elk versus female cougars, which only has about 64% of their total prey consumption of being deer. So very quickly, the research efforts across the state of Oregon, sponsored by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, has provided a lot of research information that's been incorporated into our plan. Oregon cougar density, based on our study area estimates, it's greater than several of the other published data from surrounding states. Cougars survive very well in Oregon, and every year, 150 of every 200 adults survive to the following year and are available for reproductive efforts. Cougars have had significant impacts on our Oregon elk populations, particularly in areas where we have high cougar densities, and that impact is coming from cougar predation on our elk calves. And so with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you for the update on the cougar management plan and research. And we'll see if there's any questions. Senator Hansel.
May, three quick questions for Mr. Melcher. Annual, how many cougar tags are issued in the state of Oregon? Do you know?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, you know, I want to say it's in the neighborhood of 25,000, but I really would have to follow up with you and give you this.
How many of them are approximately, how many get filled?
It's certainly in the hundreds. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, it's certainly in the hundreds. It's a very small proportion of the total tags. And if I may, that is the principal reason why several legislative sessions ago, we actually asked the legislature to reduce the cost of a cougar tag, because an individual's opportunity to harvest a cougar is in most cases simply by chance, and people were not willing to take a chance on a $50 or $75 tag that they might see one. They were certainly willing to take the chance on a $14 tag fee.
And then my last question is the Lake Oswego cougar. What did the department do? Were you involved in that? What was the walk me through that real
Chair quick. Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, we our district staff was certainly involved in terms of the response. I don't know that we have, we may have, but I just don't know whether we've actually made any effort to trap in that area. So I don't know what any specific control measures that may have been taken. I can certainly follow up.
Cougar is probably still there then, as far as you know?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, I would imagine so. It's the possibility of it being there is certainly good.
Other questions? Senator Bates?
Yeah, a couple questions if I could quickly. Management to me means selectively going after cougars in selective areas. And what I'm hearing here is, one, that we've had, I'm going to make sure I got this right, a dramatic decrease in our elk herds across the state or in some areas of the state. And since that's occurring, I'm not hearing that we're going in selectively working those areas with dogs. Maybe you are, but I haven't heard it. If part of the plan here is to protect humans and to have a reasonable level of elk herds for hunters, then we should make that part of our plan and work it. This is an incredibly complex issue. You're trying to balance human safety. You're trying to balance elk herds and deer herds, and at the same time balance the value of having cougars in our state at a fairly high level. And I'm not sure your management plan is getting you where you want to get to. And the question I have is, randomly shooting them, as we're doing now, doesn't seem like management. Randomly opening up counties to them doesn't seem like management. Do you think your management plan is working? Is it functioning?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, certainly to the extent and with regard to the tools that we have in our ability to, as you point out, focus cougar harvest activities, our tools, we don't have any tools to do that right now. Simply, there is no ability to focus that activity in a particular area, because 99% of hunters that purchase a cougar tag do not purchase it with the intent of going cougar hunting. They purchase it with the intent of going to their regular deer hunting or elk hunting location, and if they see a cougar, they'll have an opportunity to shoot one. But the plan does address this idea of trying to focus it in some areas with regard to the target areas. So the commission in the plan did adopt a target area approach where We are certainly not doing it statewide, but in limited areas, we have gone in and administratively with volunteer agents as well as hired agents, done specific control work in focused areas where we either had high livestock depredation, high human safety conflict rates, or in this particular case, low calf elk survival rates to address those in those three issues in those focused areas.
Follow up,
Mahon.
Thank you. I want to be clear, I'm not opposed to hunters, and I do want cougars in our area. I probably had more interaction with cougars than most people here. I used to have a ranch. We had a monthly interaction with various cougars, and some of them were kind of fun. Some of them were not fun.
Yeah.
My question is, we at this time to manage game, we often have tags that are allowed in certain areas at a certain limited number. Sometimes there's even lotteries for those. People wait years to get those lotteries. It's been suggested to you before and rejected that instead of having volunteer agents, that you target areas you really need some control of cougars in, and that you offer those tags to the general public with supervision by the department, and you charge those tags. I think as many people in this room would probably would like to have an opportunity to do that and be a real management tool. When you do real management, not this random killing of cougars, which I don't see is getting us where we need to get to, or this room wouldn't be full right now. So why have you not done that?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, appreciate the question. Our ability to do that is we do not have the ability to do that under current statute. So under current statute, we can only utilize agents, and those would be folks who are not hunting for recreation. Those are folks, essentially, when we hire an agent or have a volunteer agent that goes out and does cougar work for us, they don't get to retain any part of the trophy or of the meat. So in your scenario that you're highlighting is something that would take statutory change to allow us to do that.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to ask any more questions, but we've had this discussion before. I still don't understand the department's position. I think a lot of this could be handled better if we had a better management plan that was really handled properly for everyone involved. And we've suggested legislation, and it's been rejected by the department in the past. So we'll leave it there for right now.
So I have a quick question on the target areas, and we have the handout in front of us with those there. And how often are those reevaluated? For instance, you know, you're looking at additional target areas or changing those specific target areas.
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, the target areas are for a discrete temporal time frame. So I believe we've been doing them for 3 or 4 years and then moving on. So right now I think we're in our second phase of target areas, if you will. We had three target areas initially where we did work, and now we've moved on from those initial three to four other target areas.
And follow-up to that is, I know we're talking about updates to the Cougar Management Plan, and how often does the commission update the plan? I know there's no requirement, and we're talking about that in the rule, but can you talk about how often you're going and making recommendations for updates to the plans to the commission?
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, so right now our bear plan was just updated in 2012. The cougar plan was last updated in 2006. We're expecting that in 2014 we're going to have a new, as I mentioned in our presentation, a new stochastic population model that we're going to want to be able to incorporate into our management plan. And so we are expecting that during 2014 we will be reviewing and perhaps amending the plan.
Thank you. Senator Olson, did you have a question as well?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Kurt, for your testimony. What did it cost the department to implement the current management plan, and how much did it cost prior to the passage of ballot measure 18? Do you know that? Do you have those numbers?
I do. And Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I believe in the handout that I provided you, which was not part of the testimony, Table 1, this is just referencing the target area piece of the Cougar Management Plan. But you'll see Table 1 highlights the amount of money the department spent over the first 4 years implementing three target areas. In terms of what kind of revenue would we generate if we were having individuals pay us to do that. We have not done that analysis, but certainly I think as you've heard and as you will hear, there is interest in individuals who would like to be able to utilize the North American model of wildlife management, which is hunters essentially funding the work and working to manage wildlife populations. So we haven't done a specific analysis on what kind of revenue we could generate associated with that, though.
Do you have another question?
Yeah, one follow-up. I asked Representative Clem, I think you heard me ask a question about the hunting and your hunting guides and your fishing guides, how extensive they are. If you were to, in fact, get this bill that you're looking at, would you be able to adequately manage the taking of these pristine animals so that you could balance the needs of the humans, the needs of the elk, the deer, and the cougar itself, so that we would not run back into a session where we had some few cougars we were worried about losing all of them?
Yeah. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I think absolutely. And I do want to make it clear we're neutral on the bill. But I do think absolutely we could do that. As you mentioned, as Representative Clem mentioned, our hunting regulations are very complex. We manage based on wildlife management units already. Managing cougar populations right now on, I believe, 7 zones across the state, each with an individual quota that we track, closing the season if the quota is achieved, although in most years and in most zones that those quotas are not achieved. But we do have the ability to do that, and fairly confident.
Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony or your overview. Appreciate you coming in. Okay, we're going to go ahead and call up the first panel, which is we have a OSU researcher, graduate student Darren Clark, and then we have Joe Ricker and Stan Steele. Okay, we're going to, as soon as one of you sits down, we're going to start the clock going. So do you, Darren, do you want to go first? And I know you've put down as neutral, so why don't we have you go first? Okay. And
all right.
Just a reminder for everybody to state your name for the record, please, right over there. And this person right here is our wonderful committee assistant who will take your written testimony. Okay, welcome, Darren. If you want to get started, and you need a microphone to speak into. Thank you.
All right. Madam Chair, Senators, I am going to just briefly go over my PhD research. I've been conducting at Oregon State University, which is actually the Mount Emily Cougar Study that ODFW just presented briefly before.
State your name for the record, please.
My name's Darren Clark.
Great, thank you. I was like, didn't you guys got the stripes going in the right direction, so you matched up. I know you coordinated before this.
We did. So just briefly, we started out monitoring cougar predation by placing GPS collars on a sample of cougars within the Mount Emily Wildlife Management Unit. We collared 25 GPS, placed GPS collars on 25 cougars and monitored those cougars for 7,642 days, which represented approximately 20.9 cougar years of data. During this time, we would download GPS information approximately every 2 weeks, identify where cougars spent a substantial amount of time, and we would then hike in and see if the cougars actually killed anything at those areas. So over a 3-year study, we were able to locate 1,213 prey items. Of those 1,213, 1,158 were deer and elk. And as ODFW mentioned earlier, approximately 70% of the cougar kills were deer and 30% were elk. When cougars were preying upon elk calves, they killed a total of 364 elk during our study, and elk calves made up 75% of that 364 total number of elk being killed, which follows fairly closely with the elk calf survival study they did, with cougars appearing to have a substantial impact on elk through predation on elk calves. We used all of our kill information to calculate kill rates, and what we found is that the old adage that cougars kill one deer or elk per week held true in our study also, but there were some important seasonal differences and kill rates, and it also varied by the sex of the cougar and whether females had kittens or not. Kill rates for male cougars during the winter, they killed one ungulate item, 0.6 ungulates every week. It's kind of a hard number to wrap your head around. And during the summer, they killed 1.1 ungulates per week, ungulates being deer and elk. Females without kittens would kill about 1.3 deer or elk per week in the summer and 0.8 during the winter. And females with kittens would kill about 1.5 times per week in the summer and 1.1 times during the week in the winter. So on average, cougars are killing 1.55 times more frequently during the summer than they are in the winter. And we found a strong correlation between the frequency cougars were killing and the average size of prey that they were killing. So during the summer months, cougars really focused on killing deer and elk calves. So they're killing smaller prey, basically gave them a smaller meal, and they needed to kill more frequently to meet their energetic requirements.
You've got 11 minutes left for both of you.
You're fine.
Okay. Just giving you a warning there.
And so we also looked at prey use. And ODFW provides summary information on that. One of the key things you need to figure out when you're looking at predation is whether predators are actually killing things in a disproportionate manner compared to what's available on the landscape. And so in cases where predators are killing more frequently, the proportion of their diet is greater than the proportion on the landscape, that's termed selection and indicates those animals are being killed basically more frequently than you'd expect by random. And the basic pattern we documented in our study was that we saw a strong pattern of selection for elk calves during the summer by both sexes, male and female cougars. And male cougars were also killing a lot of one-year-old elk during the summer. During the summer, all cougars killed adult elk less frequently than you expect. And female cougars were killing deer basically as you would expect by random. And males tended to be killing them less than you expect by random. The pattern shifted a little bit in the winter, where males continue to still select elk calves, killing them more frequently than you expect, whereas female cougars start to use elk calves basically at random. And female cougars actually start to kill fawns more than you expect at random during the winter, which indicates a prey shift for female cougars and likely highlights a point that they are unable to effectively handle large prey due to their smaller body size than male cougars. Male cougars are about 1.5 times the size of female cougars, so they can more effectively handle these large elk calves in the winter and adult elk throughout the year. Kind of the last thing we looked at, we were interested in the whether cougars were selecting for a particular sex of deer or elk. And the pattern we found was that cougars were selecting for male deer during the winter. This is when breeding activities occur for deer. They tend to breed in November, which likely made these, I don't know if everybody up here has seen a mule deer rutting before, but they get kind of goofy and just chase girls around all day and are probably pretty susceptible to predation during that time. But we did not see
It sounds like some guys I know, but...
We didn't see a similar pattern with for elk. Basically, there was no selection for sex of elk. And I think with that, I'll just wrap up briefly talking about some of the other things I'm still working on. We don't have finished up yet. We're actually working on a population model to estimate cougar densities in Northeast Oregon and also estimate population growth rates using survival rate information and things that ODFW talked about earlier. And the last thing we're going to be doing is trying to actually quantify the impact that cougars are having on elk populations through some population models. Right now, it appears that cougars are having an impact on elk populations through by limiting calf recruitment, but we don't know the magnitude of that impact, and putting a number on that can help aid management decisions in the future and give an idea of what prescriptions might be needed and what level of, say, targeted removal of cougars is actually needed to benefit an elk population. And with that, I will turn it over.
Stan or whoever wants to go next.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. I'm Joe Ricker. I'm here representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm here today to support House Bill 2624 Alpha. I'm not here to advocate for the removal of all or even a large portion of the cougar population. I'm here to advocate for the management approach of cougars that for all wildlife in Oregon, not just the way our hands were tied in some cases today. It's time for ODFW to effectively manage cougars to be restored, and that is the use of hounds. wildlife management is not a one-size-fits-all proposition. What can and should be used in a rural county may, in fact, not be a useful tool in the urban environment. But that decision should be left up to our counties. Let them come to ODFNW and see if they want to use hounds in their counties. I'm sure you've heard the argument that claims to be science-based on the management of cougars. With a little research and reading, you can find a document that supports a variety of positions on cougar management. I just remind you that Oregon has got one of the longest histories of cougar research and cougar management. You've heard from the ODFNW, you've heard from the gentleman to my right. I'd like to see that continue. There are a few points that I would like to highlight. Big game herds are declining in Oregon. Deer elk harvest has dropped roughly in half since the Measure 18 was passed. Rocky Mountain elk, out of the 33 management units in Oregon, only 16 of them are up to or exceed management objectives. On Roosevelt elk, there's only 18 of the 20 wildlife management units are below the management objective. Cougar numbers have increased in Oregon. Their numbers have roughly doubled since Measure 18 passed. As you heard, in 1961, we had about 214. I would remind you that the hound hunters are some of the people that advocated to move cougars off of the unprotected predators list and move them into managed wildlife. In 1994, there were about 3,100, and that's where the floor was set in the cougar plan. In 2005, that number went up to 5,5101, to be exact. And by 2012, the population had reached just under 6,000. So it's doubled since 1994. The burden for managed wildlife in Oregon is a fee-based system, with sportsmen and their activities covering the bulk of the costs. There's very little general funds that goes into wildlife management in Oregon. In order to have those funds, you've got to have hunters on the ground. The economic impact on rural counties is evident along with the decline of wildlife. The average hunter spends about $2,500 a year in his activity. In closing, OHA supports the bill, encourages you to schedule a work session on this bill, and move it to the floor of the Senate. This is an opportunity to put wildlife management back in the hands of Oregon's professionals in Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you. Stan.
Senator Dingfelder.
You need a microphone.
My name is Stan Steele from the Oregon Outdoor Council. And what you've heard today is just exactly where we stand on this bill. It's a good bill. It's a bill that allows county management of wildlife, but still completely authorized and supervised by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. But obviously, the bill needs more than a courtesy hearing. It needs to have a work session and allow those who we have elected statewide to weigh in on what we feel is one of the most critical and important wildlife management issues in the state, and definitely in the state within the last several decades. We went from 200 when cougar were basically a housefly. They were vermin that we swatted, we killed, we poisoned, we trapped, we did everything we could. Because at that time, that was management of the time. But the leading group in Oregon who asked for that to be discontinued was actually the hound hunters, who have been excluded from the management process since 1994. The bill passed by 45,000 votes statewide. 45,000 votes. It did not pass in a single rural county. That tells us that the representation of this issue has to be dealt with by the current elected officials. We have a problem. You've heard it very well talked to today. The science is clear. We're losing our deer and elk herds. We're losing the actual funding source that conservation relies on for non-game and game. This is a very big day for big game in Oregon and big game management. We can have additional boards, we can have additional hearings, and we can talk about it forever. But the science is abundantly clear. And if you think it's not, right now, May 8th, just a few days ago, in South Dakota, they are replicating the exact study that Mr. Clark talked about to my right. They found the exact same results. Now, we can question science throughout the United States. We can question whether this study was good or whether that study was bad. But the bottom line is, the preponderance of the evidence on this issue is clear. If it's an animal rights issue, let's identify it as that. If it's a wildlife issue, let's make sure we identify it as that. Let's give it the exact respect that it deserves. So where we stand as the Oregon Outdoor Council is you're going to hear science, you're going to have people come in. Recently we heard a person come in as an expert testimony on the wolf issue in Oregon and say that Idaho's wolf management and hunting is better than ever. The evidence is quite the contrary when you just talk to any Idaho wildlife management official. They've lost millions of dollars. Let's not let Oregon repeat the mistake of letting a population get so extremely high that we have to take a remedial action that is irresponsible and have to kill thousands of animals under the guise of getting things back into balance. Let's be proactive. Our professionals in the state of Oregon are experts. We have faith in them, and yes, at times we disagree with them, but the science is clear on this issue. Houndsman led the fight. In 67, they're the ones that came before your colleagues and asked for cougars to be made a big game mammal in Oregon. They were the true conservationists. It wasn't the proactive animal rights movement that we all have to hear about how hunters are stereotyped, we're a bunch of knuckle draggers. They were the ones that came before you and requested the science. Let's follow that path. This is not necessarily a rural suburban issue. It is an Oregon issue. But I really do think that a work session has to be scheduled on it and not just have more rhetoric. It's time to move forward and do our jobs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stan. Questions for any of the panelists, Senator?
Yeah, a couple of questions, Mr. Clark. First of all, good to see you. I might brag a little bit. He's a graduate of West McEwen High School in Athena, Oregon, and a great family, and I haven't seen him for a while. Good to see you, Darren. You had 300 elk. I think I heard you say that there were 300 elk calves taken in the course of your study, yet you don't know for sure if it has an impact on the overall elk herds. Why wouldn't that 300 elk being removed from the population have an impact?
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, it's the thing you have to realize with predation, there's a compensatory and additive mortality. Additive mortality occurs when you have more individuals dying than what would just die naturally of natural causes, say if there were no predators out there. That's an oversimplification of that issue. But at this point, we don't know if it's additive or compensatory mortality that's going on. So if we can try and simulate that through some population models, then we can maybe identify and quantify that level of impact of what degree cougar predation is actually additive mortality on elk calves.
Then lastly, you had 27 collared areas or collared cougars within your study area. Did you have, were you aware of any other cougars that were in that same area as well? And what would that population be estimated wise?
Without question, there were additional uncollared cougars in the area. Using some of our density estimates from the SCAT work that ODFW talked about, you come up with about 93 cougars in the Mount Emily Wildlife Management Unit. That includes kittens, subadults, and adults. And kittens make up about 40% of that number. So cougars that are greater than 1 year old, there's somewhere around 50 to 60 cougars in Mount Emily unit.
Were any of the predation attributed to them, or did you pretty much follow the collared ones for
we
your figures?
Followed the collared ones. Okay. So all of our numbers just come from that component of the population.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. The next panel will come up, and then we'll go into the two-minute public testimony. We have Scott Beckstead, Sally Mackler, and Rhett Lawrence. We'll start the clock again. Okay. Can you get it started, please? Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, For the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I live in Sutherland, North Douglas County. I'm a constituent of Senator Floyd Prezonsky, Representative Bruce Hanna. The Humane Society of the United States owns and operates Dutchess Horse Sanctuary. There are 1,120 acres that is frequented by not just horses, but also deer, other wildlife, and some of our top predators as well. By way of history, I'd like to throw some numbers out there, and I'd like you to follow me, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about numbers in 1993, the year before Measure 18 was passed, and 2012, last year. And if I may stop for just a second, Chair Dingfelder, is there a way to shut me up at 5 minutes?
Certainly.
Okay, just throw the gavel or whatever you have to do. In 1993, there were 276 cougar complaints. In 2012, there were 287. That's down from a high of 1,072 in 1999. In 1993, the year before Measure 18 was passed, there were 560 cougar tags sold. In 2012, there were 50,889 cougar tags sold. In 1993, there were 160 cougars killed by hunters. Last year, in 2012, there were 242. Total cougar mortality, the year before Measure 18 was passed, 208 cougars. In 2012, 495. Cougar complaints are at an all-time low since Measure 18 was passed. So what is House Bill 2624 really about? It's about sport hunting. It is about using dogs to hunt cougars for sport. It's not about public safety, because cougar complaints are down. And you'll notice that, you know, the cougars must keep track of when the legislature is in session, because all of a sudden you start hearing about all sorts of cougar sightings once the legislature is meeting. And then once the legislature convenes, then the cougars get the memo and they decide to go out and mind their own business. The fact is, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Measure 18 was carefully written to allow problem individual animals to be removed from the population with the use of hounds. So let's be very clear on what the voters were voting for. What the voters said that they did not want was for Oregon's entire cougar population to be hunted for sport with hounds. And that is exactly what House Bill 2624 seeks to do on a county-by-county basis. So when we wrote Measure 18, and I was one of the original authors of Measure 18, and I was also director of the campaign to pass Measure 18, I was also one of the directors 2 years later to defeat Measure 34, which upheld the ban and which was passed by an even more overwhelming majority of Oregon voters. We anticipated that there would be ongoing attempts to repeal Measure 18 by the houndsmen and by the trophy hunters. What we did not foresee was that there would be such a determined effort by the state's wildlife agency to make it easier and easier and easier to kill cougars. ODFW has done everything in its power to make it as easy as possible to kill more and more cougars. House Bill 2624 is legally unworkable. It sets a terrible precedent. Imagine if counties were able to start opting out of voter-approved measures that apply to the entire state. And I can just throw out death with dignity, medical marijuana, the tax measures. Imagine if 2624 were passed, suddenly the precedent is there for counties to start opting out of other voter-approved statewide measures.
Scott, you're coming up in 5 minutes.
I'll wrap it up. Thank you. The fact is that cougars and hounds don't know where county lines are. You can start in a county that has banned hounding and cross into a county that allows it, and vice versa. I just want to say this. California banned cougar hunting long ago. They have some of the biggest population centers on the planet in that state, and yet problems with cougars are at an all-time low, and the cougar population is stable. Compare that to Vancouver Island, which has the heaviest amount of cougar hunting, and has the highest level of human-cougar conflicts anywhere on the planet. Four major newspapers in the state have urged a no vote on the approach of 2624. It is our position that 2624 is bad public policy, bad for Oregon's wildlife, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Sally.
Hi, my name is Sally McLaurin, representing Predator Defense. We're a national conservation organization based in Eugene. I came today prepared to talk about House Bill 2624, but I see that our opponents have spent about 45 minutes discussing the Cougar Management Plan, so I feel that the playing field is a little bit unlevel here in terms of our...
Sally, just to clarify, the agency was asked to come and do an introduction by the chair, so every panel is each panel is getting 15 minutes, and then we'll have 2 minutes each for proponents and opponents.
Okay. I do want to make a few comments about the Cougar Management Plan and some general biological points here. I do have a degree in biology. Cougar populations do not overpopulate. We have been given the impression that if we don't kill down the cougar population, that it's going to explode. That doesn't happen. There are a number of mechanisms in place that control their population. First of all, the prey. They're not going to eat themselves out of a house and home. I provided you with some information about deer and elk harvests. You can take a look at this. You can see that the hunting success rate for the elk population and the deer population is hanging in there just as well as it was in the 90s on both counts. You may also notice that the number of hunters have decreased dramatically, which may have a certain bearing on the actual total number of animals taken during the seasons. The quotas in the Cougar Management Plan were based strictly on the size of the population in 1994. If every single one of those quotas were met, we would have a population now the size of 3,000 animals, the same size that it was in 1994. That's not a science-based way of determining populations or managing them, to simply say we're going to keep our population the way it was in 1994. The population model that's used in the plan is flawed. I've provided you with some comments from the about the population model and some other issues. The population model is based primarily on harvest and non-hunter take. According to Becky Pierce, who's a biologist with the California Department of Fish and Game, harvest and non-hunter take are notoriously bad indices to population size, yet this document relies heavily on those data for population estimates. Etc. There's some quotes here from very outstanding cougar biologists that have significant problems with the cougar population model. Target areas that are now in position where agents are going in and killing down the cougar population indiscriminately are strictly in hunting areas and have nothing to do with public safety or to do with livestock depredation issues. House Bill 2624 is being presented to you as a solution to a problem. In truth, it is a bad solution to a problem that is desperately being sought, but that does not exist. There is no problem and there is no need. If you want to talk about public safety, there is no evidence whatsoever in biological literature and research that's been done that supports that allowing hound hunting or increasing the hunting capabilities by using hounds is going to have any impact whatsoever on public safety. In fact, trophy hunters are not going to be hunting near Representative Spranger's district. They're going to be hunting in remote areas looking for trophy cats, large dominant animals. The results of that type of hunting means that you're ending up with an increased proportion of juveniles in the population. Those are the age class size of animal that is responsible for conflict. So, indeed, by pursuing this bill and pursuing trophy hunting of these cats, you are actually increasing the probability of having conflicts. That's what research is telling us. House Bill 2624 doesn't add another tool to the box. We have two laws that are in place now, the safety bill 498.166 and 498.012. One is for damage.
One is for safety, and it allows the use of hounds right now to be used for those purposes, to be used correctly, as the voters twice intended them to be used, which was to be selectively removing any problem cat, not indiscriminately killing down the population. The public felt and still feels that way, thanks to a poll that was taken by our opponents, shows that still today the public feels the same way. They do not want hounds to be used to indiscriminately kill down cougar populations. They want them to be used to select the rare problem animal from the population and remove it. So that the people still feel the same way that they did before, and our safety laws are very broad and general. They allow for the taking of any cougar that is even seen repeatedly during the daylight with hounds. There's no lack of hunting opportunity, as Scott brought up. Houndsmen can apply to be agents. 21 have done so. If there's so many houndsmen that want to continue to use their hounds, they should be signing up for the program. They could actually be helping the public take care of the few problem animals that exist, and they could continue using their packs of hounds.
So, Sally, there's 3.5 minutes left for rep, okay. So you may want to leave a few minutes for rep.
Thank you. If anybody else wants to give me your time, I'll be happy to take it.
Yeah.
We can see
we
from the data that
time.
We were given here that these agents are being used very minimally to respond to damage and safety complaints. They're being used predominantly in target areas and in research, not to help the public selectively remove a problem cat.
Okay, so why don't we let Rep, there's 3 minutes left. Do you want to sit, maybe wrap up?
Give it to me.
I can be very brief. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. We also oppose House Bill 2624A, just believe it is unnecessary, counter to the will of the voters in Oregon. I did want to state for the record that, as I did in the hearing in the House, the Sierra Club is not anti-hunter. We have many hunters in our ranks, and that's one of the reasons we decided this session not to oppose House Bill 2390, which would extend the sunset on the ability to use agents to hunt cougars and bears with dogs. So, but ultimately, we just believe that House Bill 2624 is unnecessary. As you've heard, the number of complaints is about the same as it was 20 years ago, while the number of cougars being killed has more than doubled. And simply, we've got programs in place. We've got a cougar management plan that seems to be taking care of the matter, and we simply believe this bill is not necessary. So would encourage you to oppose this bill as we do.
Thank you. Any questions from this panel?
Anyone on the panel can answer this. Do you folks believe in game management plans that are prescribed, such as we have for fish?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, absolutely. But the wildlife management needs to be based on sound science. The Oregon Cougar Management Plan is based on deeply flawed science. The best cougar biologists in the nation have unanimously criticized the Cougar Management Plan in its scientific methodology. It's time to reexamine the Cougar Management Plan. Pull it off the top shelf. Let's look at it. Let's see if it's actually doing what ODFW wants it to do.
If you think there's if there is a problem with depredation on elk and deer in a particular wildlife management area, do you think that would be adequate to go out and maybe thin the predators, if you will?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I think that cougar and elk and deer have been cohabitating just fine for thousands and thousands of years. And I think that what you didn't see in ODFW's presentation were human-caused mortality. I mean, we heard a lot about cougar mortality on calf elk, but what we didn't hear is how many deer and elk are being killed on highways. What is the effect of habitat loss? What is the effect of disease? I mean, there are so many different causes of mortality on deer and elk. I would want to know where does the cougar fit in all the different ranges of causes of deer and elk mortality. We didn't hear that today.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we're going to start calling up folks that signed up. I am going to call up four people at a time. We have four chairs. We're going to start with people coming from over 100 miles, and we're going to start, we're going to alternate that folks who are for and folks that are against. Like I mentioned, we have more people signed up than we have time, but we'll get through as many as we can. Okay, first we have Ted Craddock, and I'm going to ask you to come up to the podium. Dwayne Bernard, Ty Stubblefield, and that's all I have that's over. Anybody else over 100 miles away that didn't mark that down there? And you're for the bill? Yes, four? You're for the bill here? Okay, so we'll call you up next.
Oh.
This is for the folks who are for this particular legislation. So we have Ted Craddock, Dwayne Bernard, Ty Stubblefield, and then we'll have Jason Hasselbacher. Jason, am I saying that right? Come on up. All right, whoever wants to get started. Okay, you're 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Ty Stubblefield. I'm the field administrator for Oregon Hunters Association. I'm here in support of House Bill 2624A. This issue is less about cats and dogs and more about rural communities and economics. There are two parts to economics affected by cougars. They kill livestock and they killed wildlife. Rural Oregon life revolves around both of these resources. Small ranchers and farmers' livelihood depends on the livestock they raise. When a cat kills livestock, it is a financial ripple effect on that rancher for years. With the growing cougar population, this has become commonplace in rural communities. These same rural communities also rely on hunter dollars to help them survive each year. Hunters spend millions of dollars in Oregon purchasing hunting license, tags, gear, fuel, food, camping supplies, and vehicles. One of my handouts is ODFW's economic study on hunters, fishermen, wildlife viewers. So there's some numbers in there you can look at. Hunters flood these towns, contributing to their economies and carrying them through year to year. When the cervid populations drop, as it has done in the past 18 years, you get a financial hardship in these small communities. I won't go on. We know what's happened since Measure 18 passed. These cats are in our towns. They're on our children's school grounds. They're in our parks, and they're on our freeways. I also handed out, I did some brief research yesterday at the local paper. There's half a dozen articles in the Roseburg area of cats being hit on school grounds and whatnot. Only 9 of 36 counties approved Measure 18. That means there's 27 counties that saw the necessity to keep hounds in Oregon.
Thank you. Yep, go ahead.
My name is Dwayne Bernard from Rainier, Oregon. I represent Oregon Outdoor Council. But there's some kind of a mix-up where I did not sign up to testify today.
Okay, well, somebody signed you up, so if you want to pass the mic over,
that's
you can.
Fine. You give me a minute or two,
sure.
I will.
You're up here. You might as well.
That's right. I hope this 2624 gets a work session. I think it's something that's badly needed. We need to have cougar hunting in these other states, or other counties, excuse me, that really want it and need it. It is sorely needed in many counties in eastern Oregon, southern Oregon. I know there's some in the states that don't need it and don't want it, but give the ones that do need it a chance, for gosh sakes. It's only fair. They know what they're doing. Let OBFMW and these counties manage their cougars.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, even though you were signed up by somebody else.
Madam Chairman, Senators, my name's Ted Craddock. I'm a houndsman from Northeast Oregon. I'm the guy that's done all this research on the cougars for the last 35 years. I'd like to touch on something that maybe hadn't been touched on before. We know they eat deer and elk, but they kill porcupines. The porcupines have literally been wiped out in the mountains. There's still a few in the valleys, but I haven't seen a porcupine track in 15 years. Well, we got the beavers. They're really tough on the beavers. Of course, they're a little harder to catch than the porcupine. We still have a few beavers left in the mountains. And then we have badgers. They're awful tough on the small game. Badgers, there's not a lot of them left. They're a little easier to catch for the cougars. And one of the guys spoke about, we are the people that try to get these cougars some protection. We are the ones that are interested in them, the ones that really care about them. Well, I'm not interested in killing them, and I don't think most of the hound guys are, but we have to do something. And as far as trophy hunting, you got to take out some of those big cats. If you don't take them out, you're going to have inbreeding. And some of the studies that I was on, we had one male that bred his daughter. Well, the kittens had real short tails. They need those long tails when they're running down game to balance their running. And these cats did not survive to be a year old because they just didn't have the balance. So I guess if there's any questions you'd like to ask me.
Thank you. We'll hear from this next gentleman, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, Senators. My name is Jason Hasselbacker. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2624A. I'd ask that you would also support the bill. I was 12 when Measure 18 took in effect, and essentially I've never known hunting with hounds. I've never hunted cougars with dogs, and should the use of dogs be returned, odds are I would not proactively hunt cougars with them. However, as you've heard today, since 1994, ODFW has estimated that the cougar population has risen from 3,000 to an estimated 6,000. That's a 100% increase in the last 19 years. I feel that we have the responsibility to make sure that our wildlife populations are sustainable. Likewise, with urban growth, we also share the same responsibility to ensure those populations are managed to remain at levels that limit urban conflict. We also have the responsibility to ensure that one wildlife population does not become depleted at the expense of another, directly relating to our deer elk populations. With a cougar population twice that of ODFW management plan quota, I believe cougars to be above sustainable levels. Continued population growth appears to be a foregone conclusion until either the food source becomes eliminated, meaning the deer and elk or other critters, or we interact and manage them alternatively than what we're doing at the moment. According to ODFW Cougar Management Plan, the current harvest levels are not being successful in preventing additional population growth. The use of dogs has widely been known to be the most effective way to manage cougars. It is neither inhumane nor is it reckless to do so. Keeping current population numbers in line with ODFW management is necessary to allow our deer and elk herds to continue on at sustainable levels. Limiting cougar populations is also critical to minimizing urban conflicts and preventing unnecessary interactions. House Bill 2624A will allow those counties most impacted to have a voice. It will allow those counties with cougar population problems to take some action. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah. Any questions?
Sir, you're the helmsman, and I'm kind of a hands-on kind of guy myself. And it sounds like you're out there in the field with this all the time. Let me ask you, if 2624 was to come into being, do you think that would benefit the other game species that we have out there? Because it seems like as man gets in and interferes, we screw the whole thing up. And it looks like we've done a pretty good job of it, where you said we're losing porcupine and the beavers are taking a beating. Do you think if this bill came to fruition that we could get a balance back with porcupines, whatever else is out there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, any other questions? I have one for Mr. Stubblefield. You related to Robert?
No. Uncle Robert.
Oh, I was going to say, I used to work with Robert Stubblefield, and I'm wondering if you might be related to him. Okay. Seeing there's no other questions, thank you very much for your testimony today, gentlemen. Okay, we will hear from the next folks who, this is on the against side, and these folks came from over 100 miles. We have John Cox, Andrea Kozel, is that right? Debbie Catalina, and then I will call up Paul Catton, who came from Tillamook. Still a long way. Okay. Huh? Oh, she did? Okay. So, Andrea left. We'll hear from Brian Posowitz. All right, whoever wants to go first, sir? And if you can state your name for the record.
My name's John Cox. I'm a forever Northwesterner. I was born and raised here. I spend a lot of time out in the mountains, on the woods, from the coast all the way over to Klamath Falls. I do photography. I don't shoot anything. I don't make my living by hunters, none of that. And quite frankly, I'm going to bring up something that hasn't really been touched, with the exception of one fellow. I don't see the shortage in elk and deer. I don't, the bear, I see porcupine on the, from the coast over to Klamath Falls, raccoons. I just don't, I don't get what's going on here and that kind of thing. And as a taxpayer, I think we're wasting our time and whatnot because you're spending my tax money here. And I'm not, it's just, it's upsetting. And that kind of thing, I think, you know, these dogs and that kind of thing don't need to be out there tracking anything. They get hurt. I've seen dogs with claw marks on the sides of them. I've seen them in a bloody mess. I've seen dogs left out there up in the mountains, and they might come and pick them up, I don't know, maybe once a week or whatever. But they just leave them out there, and I'm not really over-impressed with hounders and that kind of thing, the people that work with these dogs.
Brian?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Brian Posowitz. I'm from Portland. My testimony is on behalf of myself only. Just by way of background, I grew up in Montana. I did a lot of hunting and fishing when I was young. I came to Oregon to go to college across the street. I've been a permanent resident of Oregon since 1984. I've hunted and fished regularly over the years, although more recently I enjoy the outdoors in other ways. I'm here to oppose House Bill 2624. Since I only have 2 minutes, I want to focus my comment on just how this bill relates to the fact that we've already had two ballot measures on this issue. The majority of voters has said twice that they consider hunting cougars with hounds unfair and inhumane. I don't think that when the majority of voters did that in Multnomah County, in Clackamas County, in Washington County, and in Jackson County, all of whom voted against the repeal of the ban, I don't think they were saying we just consider it unfair and inhumane in our county, but perfectly sporting and fine if you want to do it somewhere else. I know there are those here who would say that voters in Jackson County should have no say over how somebody kills an animal in, say, Union County. I think that is wrong. I think that empathy for other living things reasonably extends across county lines. I think our system of state laws says that people in one county can sometimes have a say over what happens in other counties by passing laws that apply statewide. And I also think this would put us on a slippery slope of allowing counties to opt out of statewide ballot measures that they disagree with. There are plenty of others where the same can be said about it passing overall, but rural counties opposing it. I've attached some examples of that to my written testimony. There's a table there. And finally, I want to make the point that the initiative system in Oregon has been criticized, and this will be done really quick. The initiative system in Oregon has been criticized for too often putting things in the Constitution that really should be in the statute books. And Measure 18 didn't do that. It made a statutory change only. But I think the message that gets sent when year after year after year that ballot measure gets, they entertain changes to it, you're telling voters we really can't trust the legislature to abide by our decisions, that if we want it, if we want our...
Hey, Brian.
Okay, thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Debbie Catalina. I live in Josephine County. I raise dairy goats less than a quarter of a mile from the Siskiyou Crest Wilderness, which is where I live. My travel money here was paid by the other ladies in the Rogue Valley Dairy Goat Association. I also have horses, and I am also a member of the Backcountry Horsemen, Josephine County Equine Coalition, and the Brush Riders, a 49-year-old equestrian club in Williams, Oregon. My partner is now retired, was a professional outfitter of hunting, where he numerously took hunters into the Siskiyou Crest Wilderness to hunt bear and elk, and he still packs with mules. I want to tell you that the people that I know in my community, I don't represent the whole community, but the people that I know oppose this legislation. If the Cougar Management Plan isn't working, why wasn't it addressed? And if it is working, why do we have a problem? As someone that raises goats, and I will tell you, oh, sidebar, I once saw a bear cub in the 13 years I've been living there, and I heard someone in my community lost a goat to a cougar a few years ago. So I guess they're there. I haven't seen any of them yet. I spent an awful lot of time in the backcountry every single year, a lot of that all by myself. Anyway, the people that I know in my community want to know why it takes a measure by a handful of lobbyists to overthrow our vote. We voted twice. Like these gentlemen said, we voted once and then we voted again. If our vote doesn't count, why the heck are we voting? That's what people want to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
Thank you. My name is Paul Caton. I live in very southern Tillamook County. Actually, my mailing address is Otis. And I'm here to speak against House Bill 2624. I live in Cascade Head Scenic Research Area. Some of you may have hiked in that area over the years with your family. Let me just paint a little picture of what it's like there. Cascade Head Scenic Research Area is about a little under 10,000 acres. It's basically a very unmanaged forest. My house is about 100 yards from the National Forest property line. We have huge Sitka spruces and very dense undergrowth up there. We also have a very large elk population and a very healthy deer population. We have coyotes, bear, and cougars, and bobcats. Again, it's very rural. We have a lot of vacation homes. Most of them are vacant most of the time of the year. My nearest neighbor that lives there full-time lives a quarter mile away from me, so it's quite rural. But even with that, in the 12 years that I've lived there, never had a problem, not felt safe going out, even walking at night in the dark. We just don't have a problem with it. And I don't know where the problem could be. We have elk out there all the time, but we just really don't have a cougar issue. There are cougars there. They have been seen. But it is safe. I say it's safe, but it's safe only because of, in a sense, that we do have a lot of lawbreakers and a lot of poachers that come in there. It's really easy to hunt in some of those areas along where we live. If you decide to go ahead with this hunting, using dogs for hunting cougars, I don't think it can be done in a controlled manner. You'll have to really figure out how to pull in the renegades, because, as I said, you know, ODFW does a good job of trying to keep things under control. Not ODFW, OSP, Fish and Wildlife, but there are problems. Not everybody follows the law.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for any of these panelists?
I would just like to make a comment. Sir, you talked about the initiative process and how we try to overturn it. We voted for sales tax against them about 9 times, and we still try to overturn that one. So we have a propensity to do these things.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have time for about 2 more panels of witnesses. I will call up next on the sheet. Was there anybody else for that is over 100 miles? That is for this matter. You want to speak? Okay, I'll get you next. Okay, so I'm just going to go down the list here. Dave Wiley,
yes.
David Walker, Frank Hupp, and Paul Askew. Yeah, we can do that. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Whoever wants to go first? Just need a microphone. Thanks, sir. Why don't you go ahead and get started?
Madam Chairwoman and distinguished Senate Environmental and Natural Resources Committee, my name is Frank Hupp.
and I am president of Columbia County Chapter of Oregon Hunters Association, and I represent 300 hunters and voters in Columbia County. I am 66 years old and a native son of Oregon. I have seen many changes in hunting since I first started hunting with my dad in 1956 at the age of 10. Some of those changes have been very good for hunting and wildlife in the state of Oregon, and some have been very bad. One of the very bad changes was ballot measure 18 in 1994 by taking the management of cougar and bear populations out of the hand of dedicated professionals who know what they're doing and taking the tools away from them. Today I am addressing the cougar population issue. There have been documented sightings of cougars in heavily populated communities such as twice in Lake Oswego and at the Westridge Elementary School went into lockdown, and multiple sightings within the city limits of Medford. There are also cougars found in trees in Vancouver, Washington. The sightings are increasing in frequency and are getting closer and more heavily populated areas. That should concern each and every one of us. It does me. Big cats are hunters of opportunities. Your pets, cats, pet puppies, pet chickens, pet rabbits, and children are food for cougars. Cougars have more and more hunting opportunities as our communities begin to sprawl into the cougars' hunting areas. It is not a matter of if, but when your constituents' children will be killed and eaten by a cougar.
Sir, I need you to wrap up, please. Yep. We have your written testimony. Thank you. Sir?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Wiley. I live in Sublimity, Oregon. I'm a volunteer for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and today I'm here to speak on their behalf. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation requests that the committee do what is necessary to bring this bill, 2624A, to the floor of the Senate for a vote. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation absolutely supports the employing the best science and management for all our wildlife. It follows that the Elk Foundation fully supports the Department of Fish and Wildlife in the execution of its mission to manage all wildlife for the use and enjoyment of all Oregonians. You've heard that cougars are large, very secretive predators. Cougars prey on deer and elk. Because they're large predators, they eat a lot. Cougars occasionally depredate livestock and pets. They are very territorial, and occasionally they get too close to us humans for comfort. Managing predator populations is a difficult task, and ODF&W needs all the tools available to it. That would include the use of hounds in the case of cougars. That the job can be successfully done is clearly evident in that between 1967 and 1994, they raised the population of cougars from 200 to 3,000. And by the way, they did it while dog hunting was a legal method. The increase in the cougar population was accomplished, and I must point out that the deer and elk populations were also increasing at that time. In 1994, Measure 18 removed a critical tool from cougar management toolbox, the use of dogs by licensed hunters. In 2012, we've heard that we have around 6,000 cougars. Oregon deer and elk populations, which peaked in the early 1990s, are now in decline.
Yeah. Sir, I need you to wrap up, please.
Thank you. Returning the use of dogs as a legal method of cougar hunting is critical to the management of deer and elk populations in Oregon. Please put 2624 out to the floor. Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. My name is Paul Askew. I'm with the Equal Protection Institute. We're a 14th Amendment Equal Protection organization. Hunting cougar and bear with hounds should be legally permissible. The Supreme Court has found that the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause is essentially a direction that all persons similarly situated should be treated alike. Considering that hound hunting for birds and raccoon is perfectly legal, there has to be a legitimate state interest that is not motivated by moral disapproval or political unpopularity. It is my belief that laws targeting hunting are driven by urban political organizations like the HSUS that have made it clear that they have a baseline moral objection to hunting, and hunting with hounds in particular. According to the U.S. Census, hunters comprise only 6% of Oregon's population. The anti-hunting lobby has targeted micropopulations of an already small minority group and marginalized them with laws like prohibitions against hunting bear and cougar with hounds. Remember, moral disapproval is not a rational basis for a legitimate state interest, and is a clear violation of the Equal Protection Clause. The Supreme Court has been unequivocal on this point. Justice O'Connor explained in Lawrence v. Texas, a law branding one class of persons as criminal based solely on the state's moral disapproval of that class and the conduct associated with that class runs contrary to the values of the Constitution and the Equal Protection Clause under any standard of review. Justice O'Connor continues, when a law exhibits such a desire to harm a politically unpopular group, we have applied a more searching form of rational basis review to strike down such laws under the Equal Protection Clause. The 14th Amendment requires that hunting cougar and bear with hounds be given the same protections that other methods of harvest receive. This includes other forms of hunting and trapping, especially considering that other forms of hound hunting are protected. There is no meaningful legal distinction between these similarly situated methods of animal use and harvest. In fact, the only meaningful differences between the two are stereotype and method, which are not justifications to deny an equal access and protection of the law.
Sir, I need you to wrap up, please.
Embrace diversity, embrace tolerance, and embrace equality, and pass 2624A, please.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
Chair Dingfelder, committee members, my name is David Walker. I'm from Tillamook, Oregon. I'm the president of the Oregon United Sporting Dogs Association, and we're here today to ask for your support of House Bill 2624. I want to remind you, as you've heard today, that houndsmen and their dogs are the single most effective tool there is in cougar management. When there's a problem with cougars, who do they call? The houndsmen. When there's research to be done, who's doing the research? Ted Craddock, a houndsman. So when without the houndsman, there's basically no effective cougar management tool out there. That is the tool. We'd also like to address the fact that somebody brought up the voters have voted on this twice. They've voted on bear baiting, and cougar. They've never been given the chance to vote only on cougars and to do it representing their general areas. So with that being said, Chair Dingfelder and committee members, we feel that with this bill not having been scheduled for a work session and not getting a chance to go to the floor, it's sending a loud and clear message to the people of Oregon that their voice doesn't matter in this case. So once again, we request that you move this bill to a work session and onto the Senate floor, and we would request your support on House Bill 2624.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for any of these gentlemen? All right, thank you very much. Today we have one last group that we'll hear from. We have this woman. We want to make sure I get you up here. Came from over 100 miles away. What's her name?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe. Do you want to come on up, please? And then we'll call the last group, Jane Miller. Kat, come on. Kat, you want to come up? And is it Met? I can't read that.
Nettie.
Yeah. Okay. That'll be our last group today. And just a reminder, if you have written testimony, please hand it in to the committee assistant before you leave. Whoever would like to go first? You want to get started here on the right? Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair and Senators, for allowing us to make comment. My name is Kat Kane, and I live in Fall Creek. I'm a retired teacher. And the reasons you should not pass this bad bill is that Measure 18 has been working very well, and you've already now are killing 500 cougars a year. And some houndmen, as this other gentleman pointed out, are renegades and unethical and have been caught breaking the law and poaching. Johnny Young springs to mind. He was the head of the Oregon Sporting Dogs Association when he was caught. And Ray Hilsman, who doesn't know when to stop and was called the Al Capone of Oregon. So the legislature would actually be encouraging poaching because we have no way to catch these guys way out there. And because of the territorial nature of cats, an important point is that you would wind up creating a public safety threat because youngsters come in when the old cat is killed. Now I'd like to draw your attention to the organization that brought you this law, the Oregon Outdoor Council. And I want to ask you why you're considering doing the bidding of a possibly disreputable nonprofit that was just recently formed and that already has a litany of complaints and several formal charges filed at the Department of Justice against them. A recent newspaper story made it sound like they're running a private club instead of a nonprofit. It has to be pretty bad when your secretary treasurer is the one that turns you in to the Attorney General's office for mismanagement. He maintains that Broadfoot is playing with dark money and does electioneering while on the state payroll because he's got some sort of a job. Anyhow, I'd lastly like to ask you to please listen to reputable groups like the Humane Society and not to a small group of selfish special interest trophy hunters or national or international groups like the NRA and Safari Club International, because Oregon voters will be incensed if you do an end run around the law that they passed, and you're making a mockery of our initiative system if you arbitrarily pass laws for a small group of special interest. Okay. You're going to be creating a bloodbath on the east side.
Ma'am, your time is up, please.
Please honor the will of Oregon voters and keep hounds out of Oregon. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ma'am?
We need help to get her video going.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to have this woman go next. She's been waiting patiently. Thank you.
Okay, I have a little different angle. This is a judicial angle.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Marcia Dennison, Pacific Marine Forest Wildlife Guardians Director. And this proposal is illegal, and it's inconsistent with many state laws. And I wanted to say a couple of things really, really quick. The cougar plan is 2 years overdue for public review, and cougars kill coyotes, kill elk calves, and no consideration is given to wildfire loss of food and habitat and shelter and water from drought, which is very unscientific of ODF&W. Now, okay. Here are excerpts of case law that gives a big thumbs down to the proposal. Key factors that must be met in order to present state law. Finally, in determining whether a state interest is sufficient to justify home rule preemption, the court considers a variety of factors. These factors are intended to assist the court in measuring the importance of the state interest against the importance of the local interest in order to make an ad hoc decision as to which law should prevail. These factors include the need for statewide uniformity of regulation by Fish and Wildlife Commission, two, the impact of the measures of individual of the measures on individuals living outside of the county, see wildlife policy, historical consideration concerning whether the subject matter is one traditionally governed by state or local government is by state, where the Constitution specifically commits the particular matter to state and local regulation.
Ma'am, I need you to wrap up, please.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the 2 minutes are up. You can hand in your written testimony.
Okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, it fails every single one of those, okay?
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Jane, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity, Senator Dingfelder and members of the committee, to communicate with you today. I'm with Oregon Cougar Action Team. I had 3 years ago, I had the privilege of talking to Dr. Jackson, who held a public meeting about cougars in Corvallis. 100 people attended that. At that hearing, he said that ODFW stats showed that killing more cougar caused more cougar conflict issues. So ODFW knows that their current cougar management plan is creating a safety hazard for our communities and our livestock, both in cities and in rural Oregon. ODFW also, Dr. Jackson said that poaching increased. And we currently, right now, we've done a study on mule deer where 14% of the mule deer are hunted legally. 15%, excuse me, are hunted legally. Approximately 14% are poached, and 10% are killed by cougar. So we have more human predators out there hunting our wildlife than I think is natural to have happen in our communities. And this needs to be addressed in a better management plan, because ODFW manages our wildlife as a bank account, because it is. And so the more deer and elk they have to kill, the more money they have brought in to do that process. Well, nature responds to a bigger population of deer and elk by creating more cougar. Okay. We had an outside unbiased peer review done that ODFW swept under the carpet by Dr. Robert Wilgus, who stated in his peer review that ODFW's cougar management plan is so flawed that it needs to be scrapped and they need to go back to the drawing board to start over. So we need to have a better cougar management plan based on sound science and an accurate cougar population model count, because back in 2002, this model count was accumulated and put together by two individuals who are vested individuals with ODF and W. They put together a cougar model population count, and Mr. Keister and Van Dyke, that the estimates for these treatments and control areas have no scientific validity because of the lack of verification, and it looks like it was based on a political agenda. And then Dr. Wilgus's further dissects ODFW's cougar management plan by saying that this was not based on the density of zones. Okay. I'm against 2624. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. We have your written testimony. And yes.
We'll my name is Nettie Schwager. I'm from Corvallis, and I'm going to use my 2 minutes to show a video.
Thank you, Nettie.
Any children need to leave the room, please?
It's graphic.
Here in the United States, the future of the mountain lion is in peril. More than at any other time in history, the mountain lion and its habitat are being destroyed. As many as 3,000 lions a year are being killed. Most are shot, simply for the fun of the kill. It doesn't have to be this way. Working together, we can stop this daily slaughter and protect the land that is their home. Join us at the Mountain Lion Foundation. You can personally help protect our American heritage and keep our wild landscapes working for future generations. There's still time to save America's lion.
Okay, you still have a minute if you wanted to add anything.
Or I'll add to it.
Jane, actually, your 2 minutes is up, so I want to make sure if you wanted to add anything to that.
Well, I've been listening to people talk about the...
Let's move on to item 10.
All right. Item number 10, another lightweight.
There we go. We got it.
Discuss the impossible repeal of Section 660, Title 14, and the policy regarding election of commission officers.
Okay, apologize about that.
Okay. As far as predator and prey populations go, in the natural situation without humans, they keep each other in balance. And their birth rates increase and decrease according to that. So talking about the population of elk and deer, I think, is that's just a divisive, that's just a front for just self-interest.
Any questions, any of those panelists? Witnesses, all right. Thank you very much. And with that, we are out of time for today. As I mentioned, please, if you have written testimony, hand it to the committee assistant. We have lots of testimony that was submitted ahead of time. And as we mentioned, this is not scheduled for a work session. We are... are adjourned.
It's not scheduled for work session?
Not scheduled for work session.